It's Locked On NBA. I'm David Locke, the host of Locked On NBA, the founder of the Locked On Podcast Network. Exciting show. NBA coach comes on the show, gives us the inside scoop. He just does it anonymously. Stay to the end when we discuss the next version of the Warriors Super Team. It could blow your mind. Let's get right to it today. Make sure you subscribe to your favorite Locked On Podcast Network show. And on our NFL side, the Super Bowl coverage has been amazing with Locked On Eagles and Locked On Patriots, both available at Locked On Eagles and LockedOnPatriots.com as well. Thanks very much. Exciting news, I think, coming on Locked On NBA front. We're going to expand the show a little bit, coming up with more details on that for you. Thanks very much for tuning in, being a part of it. Here is the coach on Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Well, Coach, this is sure a wacky time of year. Let me take big picture NBA locker room before we dig into all the kind of fun things, the Blake Griffin trade, why certain things click, why other things haven't, all sorts of things like that. But let me ask you, how much as a coach, or how much do coaches specifically address these issues? Is it just the elephant in the middle of the locker room for the next week or two? What do you do as a coach in the NBA about the trade deadline?
Well, that's a great question. I think people handle it different ways. But having been around for a while, I think you're burying your head in the sand if you don't acknowledge it. The one thing people forget, and because of these guys are such great athletes and great players and on display every night, is that they're human beings. And, it does bother teams and bother players. So I think as a coach and as a leader, I think it's probably best addressed probably individually with guys. I think players appreciate that when you're just honest about it and talk to them and understand that they have feelings as well. But at the end of the day, it's a hard time. It's a weird time when you see on social media or the newspapers or on talk radio that, so-and-so is going to be traded, this or that, and the other is going to go on. And as a reminder, I think, we forget sometimes, but these guys are human beings. They're people, they have feelings, they have family, and it's a stressful time. There's no way around it. So I just think you just need to be honest and know that it is something that weighs on these guys. And, all the chips fall here in the next week or so, and then they kind of got to regroup and then move forward from there and then kind of get back focused on playing basketball.
It's hard to address, though, right? Because you can't really tell the player you're not going to trade him.
Well, no, it's hard. I don't know that you necessarily address, whether you're trading him or not trading him. I think you just address it and you're aware of that, these guys have feelings about it. And, we just say, hey, you just try to stay focused and do what you, do your job. And, we'll let the chips fall. And if it's something that ends up happening, it happens. If something doesn't, then we'll go from there and we'll keep moving forward. I just think I think just honest conversations with them. And I don't know that you should necessarily get into specifics of it, but I think players appreciate the honesty and the understanding that it is kind of a tough time, especially for players whose names are being thrown around in the media, right? And then also there's the guys whose names aren't being thrown around in the media. And then all of a sudden there's this indecision about, well, what's going to happen to our team, right? I mean, so it's definitely a stressful and interesting time of the year.
Let's go to the trade that already happened. Blake Griffin gets traded from the Clippers to Detroit. Let me back up from a coaching standpoint. 3 years ago, Blake Griffin was a beast. When you were preparing game plans, or one was preparing game plans to get ready for Blake Griffin, I mean, there weren't answers. Who is Blake Griffin today?
David, it's a good question. I still think he is an elite player in our league. We had a chance to see him recently, and like I said, I still think he's an elite player. I think the injuries may have taken a little bit of toll on him. I think he has maybe slowed just a little bit, but having said that, and David, you've been calling games for a long, long time. I mean, there was his athleticism and just being a freak athlete and his big body and the way he moved was just off the charts. So when I say he may have slowed a little bit, I mean, he's still, well above average as far as being an athlete. So, but having said that, now he's going to kind of get to the phase of his career where he's going to have to you know, not just rely that much on his, you know, his athleticism and his basketball skill and his body. You know, he's going to have to start to think a little bit more. And you know, a lot of great players have gone through this transition, and the ones that really go to another level are the ones that are able to, you know, think the game a little bit better than maybe they had, and understand their body, and you know, the game's changing, and they move forward, and they end up being almost as fun to watch later in their career, you know, at the beginning of the second half of their career as they were in the first part, because now they actually think the game. So he's going to have to go there. I still think, you know, I don't want to write him off. I still think he's an elite player. It's going to be a different circumstance for him.
It's interesting. He had this month of February where Chris Paul was out. He averaged 30 points, 11 rebounds, 4 assists. He was incredibly dominating force. He was grabbing rebounds and going. I've referenced that all the time. His usage rate was 30%. He was unbelievable. I looked it up the other day. That was 2013-14.
Yep.
I was stunned how long ago that was.
Yeah, you realize he came out as a young player too, and he's played a lot of minutes. And you know, he's the way he plays with his physicality and you know, his body. I mean, it takes a toll on you over a period of time. And once again, I don't want to write him off. I just think he's going to have to change his game and you know, and think the game a little bit different way to continue to play at the level that we've seen him play at. But I think he can do that.
It's interesting. His effective field goal percentage is below league average for the first time. He's still putting up 23 points, 8 rebounds, and 5 assists. And the game is evolving so much that we're not sure how he fits. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Well, when you say you're not sure how he fits, you're talking about in Detroit? Because it would be interesting, you know, with him and Drummond playing together. Because, as you said, the NBA game has evolved.
All right, let's talk about, can you defensively switch him 1 through 4?
Yes, I think he still can do that.
Can you stretch him to the outside and have a defender go with him?
Well, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, David, I haven't looked at his exact numbers, but I think he is, he's shooting about 4 or 5 threes a game right now with the Clippers, and I think he's at least an average or maybe a slight below average, so he is capable. Now, he's not an elite shooter out there. But he is capable. He makes just enough to where you will have to stay and pull with him a little bit.
All right. How do you put he and Drummond together?
Well, you know, first of all, Drummond's having a terrific year, and, you know, Drummond's really passing the ball well. The interesting thing is they've been playing through Drummond a little bit, and obviously Blake is a guy you play through as well. So now you've got two guys that you'll have to play through. And I know, you know, Coach Van Gundy, he does a lot playing off the elbows. So maybe you have them both at the elbows, you just pick a side and you go play out of it. I don't know. It will be interesting to watch, you know, over the next month to see how they adapt to each other and how they're going to play those guys. But, you know, I know this in the league, when you have good players, you know, usually the coaches figure it out. You know, they are a little bit top heavy on the front line, which, I mean, I'd rather have good players on the front line than no good players at all. So, but, you know, I think Detroit was in a position where they, you know, the season wasn't going the way they wanted to, and you know, they put a lot of money into a new arena, and you know that you know there's a lot of expectations there. So I don't want to call it a desperation move, but I think it was a move that they had to be aggressive, trying to do something to get their team kicked in gear, because I've seen them several times this year, and there's something missing there with them. I'm not exactly sure what it was, but you know, with all the expectations they had, they weren't clicking the way they were expecting to.
Does the play of the elbow give the ball to Blake? He runs off a DeAndre pick and roll. It was one of the more potent plays in the league. DeAndre's rolling. Now Blake's down low. You try to switch, or if you can get the switch earlier so that Blake's got even a smaller guy on him in some way that he powers you inside. Can you do the same thing with Andre Drummond that he did with DeAndre Jordan?
I think so. If anything, I think DeAndre Drummond is I mean, obviously he's not as good a defensive player. He's an incredible rebounder, but I mean, DeAndre is a more skilled offensive player. So, you know, that part will be interesting. And they will cause, I mean, as Coach Van Gundy figures out where the, you know, how to put those guys together where they were together, they will cause nightmare matchups for teams. And it'll be hard to, you know, put the little, you know, play the small ball against them, in my estimate, because, like you said, those two guys are just so big and powerful that if you get in a switch situation, they're just going to kill them.
All right, let's go to Cleveland. Kevin Love, same question. Is Kevin Love still one that scares you as a guy preparing a game plan the way he was a focus in Minnesota many years ago.
Absolutely. So let's go back. They trade Kyrie. Isaiah doesn't play the first half of the year. If you go back and look at his numbers, and I haven't looked at him in the last week or two before he got hurt, but like, he was having an incredible year statistically. And you know, he kind of went from being the third man to the second man with him and LeBron, and his numbers were just incredible, you know, through the first half of the season. So you still have to worry about him. You know, now obviously losing him is a big blow for him and a team that's kind of been struggling anyway. But he definitely is a guy that you still have to worry about, just because of all the different offensive things he can do.
Defensively, is he as much of a liability as everybody says if he's playing the four and you got to switch him one through four?
When you say he's a liability, I mean, he's so good offensively. You know, some guys, you know, their offense is so good that, you know, it covers up the defense a little bit. And I don't think Love's an awful defender, but he, you know, obviously isn't as good of, you know, a defensive player as he is offensive player.
All right, let's dig into the Cavaliers a little bit. Just a midseason swoon or something more significant when you watch them right now?
It's a good question. If I knew that, I'd be on ESPN. So, but or maybe in the front office of the Cavaliers. But you know, there are some alarms there. In anything. So what happens is Isaiah Thomas comes back, who was a really good player. I think we're going to talk about this later. But Oklahoma City had this early in the year. But you know, so they, you know, you try to bring him into a situation where, you know, he's used to being a ball dominator, and he's obviously a very good one. Then he comes in to a team who is already kind of, I don't want to say going through the motions. I mean, they've been, you know, so many years in a row in the NBA Finals, and, you know, it takes a toll on you. And, you know, the regular season for a team like that, I'm not saying they don't care about it, but, you know, they know that they can turn it on like they did last year and got to the finals, or at least they think they can. So you throw in Isaiah Thomas, who the team is already kind of not playing great, and then now you got to figure out how to play with him. It's an adjustment. There's an adjustment period. And, you know, I saw that, you know, they've given Isaiah the blame. I mean, it's hard to give him the blame. Now, you know, at the end of the year or a year from now, maybe you give him the blame and maybe it doesn't work. But, you know, when he's only played a handful of games, it's hard to, you know, and a guy that plays the way he plays, it's really hard to evaluate them at this point in the season.
Warriors play like, I'll just use Steve Kerr. They were pathetic. Cavaliers are infighting. Washington Wizards have a team meeting, and everyone comes out to the media afterwards and says that it was useless. I mean, you run through there's about five more case points here. Other than about five teams in the league who are all – Damian Lillard goes and meets with Paul Allen. What is it about pre-All-Star break, late January, early February, trade deadline looming – every year in this league, what happens inside locker rooms?
Well, so, you know, it's the dog days. No doubt about it. It's the dog days of the NBA. And, you know, these guys are together in a lot of cases more than they are with their families. And, you know, you think about it, it goes back to early September. You know, what is that, 5 months now? You know, there's really no light at the end of the tunnel. I know everybody in the league is looking for All-Star break where they get that break. You know, it's just a grumpy time. You know, and as a coach and as a general manager, you've got to understand that. And that's, you know, you've got to try to just, you know, do your job. I'm not a huge believer in team meetings. I'm a huge believer in communication. It's just historically, this is the hardest time of the year in the NBA. To switch on you a little bit, which is interesting, is, you know, the NBA made this big push not to have, you know, four games in 5 nights, and they spread the season out, you know, for better play and for, you know, to protect the players more. And, wow, in the last week, how many injuries have we had? So that's been probably not what they expected when they did this schedule change, which I know I kind of switched the subject on you there. But to me, it's been interesting to watch how many injuries we've had, and it's disappointing for our league and for the players who have gotten hurt.
Well, I'll tell you, I think that what the impact is that everyone's spending 5 to 6, 7 days more on the road.
Right? Yeah.
Because, I mean, like your road trips, yeah. It used to be that you played four games at home in 9 days if you had a four-game homestand. and that you'd go on the road and play four games in 5 days. Okay, that was probably too much. That's probably true. But now, I mean, we just went on a four-game road trip recently where we left on January 4th and came back on night of January 12th for four games. So the impact has been that you're just sitting in hotel rooms more than you used to.
So do you think that adds to the injury problem we've had in the last week or two?
I think it means the player – I don't know, because Kevin Love's broken hand has nothing and Achilles are weird. They just kind of go. So, no, but I do think that there might be an element that you – and you know this better than I do. Players don't get as good a practice time. They don't get as good a training staff time as they do when they're at home.
Very fair point. Very fair point.
And the other one that's interesting is I was talking to a director of medical, whatever they call him now, who was commenting that, you know, back to backs aren't that bad on players. Sure, 4 and 5 is bad, and back to back might mean that you don't play as well. So competitively, there's definitely a drop off, he said. But from a health standpoint, your body's already at peak performance. You're just repeating peak performance again the next day. If you're flying from L.A. to Denver and you've got, you know, you're getting in at 3 o'clock. Okay, we've got a different story. But if you're doing Cleveland to Detroit, it's not actually hard on your players to do that. He said what's actually harder on them is peak performance day off, peak performance 2 days off, peak performance. Like that up and down of blows up your periodization and actually makes it harder on players physically.
You know, that's an interesting point you bring up. And I do not know this. And it just made me think of something is, so I'm sure that the league, when they did the schedule stuff, they have to have a medical team that's a part of the consulting, right? You know, I'm assuming they just didn't say the players' association said we want to spread it out a little bit, and they just did it. Surely they have input from the medical part. I don't know that, but you just made me think of something that's an interesting thing.
I don't know it either, and I sometimes wonder whether or not all of a sudden you had a, Tom Haberstroh at ESPN at the time wrote that incredible piece and had some research that showed that if you played a road game on a back-to-back, your injury rate was higher. And like, was there other research that was done, or did we just like rely on that? I have no idea to this day. Like sometimes I kind of wonder, like to your question, is there actually real medical science, not just a really, really good ESPN writer that created some of this? Let's go back on the court. So who's your best team in the Eastern Conference right now? And let me add a little flip side to that question. Who's the team most likely to represent the East in the NBA Finals?
But I think the team that's the best team right now is the Boston Celtics. I've really been impressed on, one with how they lost Gordon Hayward, and you wondered about him, but they've just done an incredible job with their regular season and bringing the young guys along and using Aaron Baines in the right way. And, I would say it's hard for me to say anybody else. I know Toronto has played great, and I don't say they've surprised people, but they've kind of got their edge back a little bit. But, Boston, if you just look at their numbers and their internals, you know, they're sustaining playing at a high level. As far as the team that's going to come out of the East, I'm still not ready to write Cleveland off. I think they will eventually, get their ship righted. And here we are talking about how bad they are, and they're still 10 games over 500. And they haven't had their, Isaiah Thomas for what, up until the last 10 games. So, I would still probably bet on Cleveland coming out of it. And here's one thing, and David, you're good at doing this, and I'm just going off a feel and in my mind at history, but, Boston, as good as they are, they have a very young team. And historically, guys, as good as they are in the playoffs, the young guys kind of fall off a bit. So, I'm just going to kind of go on my historical feeling of, that those young guys who have just played terrific. I mean, I don't want to take anything away from them because they're fun to watch. They play the right way. I would just say if you get in a 7-game series with Cleveland, or a team that has a bunch of veterans on it, maybe even like Toronto, it's just history says it's going to be hard for them to get out of there and get to the NBA Finals.
Ben Falk was on the show with me from Cleaning the Glass and gave me a nice note here on Locked On NBA that the number one indicator to playoff success is previous playoff success.
There you go.
I don't know what you do if you're building a team to try to overcome that. Quick question, because I think it's fascinating that I want to talk a little bit Western Conference. Toronto's done this brilliant thing where they have this young crew of Van Vliet and DeLon Wright and OG Anunoby, who's going to be great, at least looks to me like he's going to be great. Pascal Siakam, Jakob Poeltl. They have these young guys. I'm not sure I think any of those guys are playoff ready. They have this other core that is Lowry, DeRozan, Valanciunas, and I'm forgetting somebody. And Ibaka. I think they're the best team in the East. The question is whether Masai Ujiri is willing to move those young kids to go get one or two established players and lose a little bit of that future, because I think if he does, he makes the NBA Finals, and he might make the NBA Finals for a year or two before Boston becomes a beast.
That's a fair point. You know, and it's hard to do what you just said. I think Toronto is all in on winning, but they haven't done a heck of a job with those younger guys. You know, that goes back to a little bit of the issue with Boston. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what they do at the trade deadline, because you know, some of those younger guys have some promising futures. So I think it kind of depends on, you know, the guy that they feel like they could get. So it'll be interesting to watch them, because I agree. They're right there, and they are a legitimate contender this year. I agree with you 100% on that.
Why did the Thunder click?
Well, I'm going to throw a little bit of water on your flame here, but if you look at their schedule, it has eased up for them. Once again, obviously, you got to win the games that you're supposed to win. Before I get in and talk about them a little bit more, that you know, when they get in this next stretch where they play some more contending teams, and they still have trending in the right way, then I'll believe it a little bit more. But you know, having said that. I think the play of Paul George figuring out, how to play with this group has been a big step. I've been around, I've seen them a few times here recently, and I think there's been a big uptick on it. You know, Carmelo is Carmelo, and I think he's playing the way we expect him to play. He's a really good scorer and a good player. Westbrook may be the second part of that. I think Westbrook I think he was deferring a lot early in the year, and I think he's finally decided, I just got to go be me. And I think he's challenged Paul George to go be him, and that they'll figure it out together if they're all being who they are. And, so I think that's a process, a little bit like we talked about with Isaiah Thomas earlier. It's just, it takes a while to figure that out, because they took three guys who are used to being the dominant player on their team, and now they're trying to make a mess. So, although they're trending in the right direction, I think with their play and with their record, once they get into, playing some more competitive teams here, and I think if I looked at their schedule, I think it turns up a little bit here in the next week or two. We'll be interesting to see how they hold up and if they can continue to play this way.
Doesn't turn up for a while. They got Denver tonight, which is a good one, but then they have Pelicans, who I'm not sure who they are, Lakers, Warriors, which is tough, Lakers, Grizzlies, Cavaliers, not sure who they are, Grizzlies, Kings. So they've still got, followed by Warriors plus Magic, Dallas, Phoenix. So I'm not sure they actually, that schedule I'm not sure turns up until March. So they may, if they've won 16 of their last 21, I think they may keep that going for a little while. But you're right, what's interesting is they had a Charlotte, Sacramento Lakers stretch where they win three games, and how much is it an NBA team? You just win three in a row, you suddenly believe you're good.
Yeah, right. I mean, this is David, because you work in it. But if you lose two games in a row, you're trading the whole team and you're rebuilding. You win two games in a row, we're going to go win the championship. This is part of what I guess makes our league so great. Is there's a lot of mountains and there's a lot of valleys in this season.
Minnesota won 9 of 13 with a ton of impressive wins in that stretch. A good win over Indiana, a Pelican win, a Cavalier win, a Thunder win, a Blazer win, a Raptor win, a Clipper win when the Clippers were playing well, and all of a sudden have lost 4 of 5. Which is the true Timberwolf team?
I think it's probably more of the team that's 10 games over 500 than it is the team that, has lost 4 out of 5. They did have a hard back-to-back where they lost a tough game in Atlanta, but then they had to fly all night and go through customs in Toronto. And then
since when are Atlanta and Toronto close to each other for a back-to-back?
Yeah, right. I will say this because I do think it sounds like it's a bit unfair, but you know, just in the history of my time in the NBA, it always seems like there's just one of those back to backs. Like most back to backs may be like LA to Sacramento, right? I mean, that's a relatively easy trip, or Cleveland to Boston, or Cleveland to Philly. It seems like every year there's like one that you just scratch your head on and go, oh my gosh, I mean, what you know, why are we doing that? And you end up getting in at 4 o'clock in the morning after a tough game, and then you got to get up and go play again the next night. But always seems like there's one. So I think that must have been Minnesota's one. Sorry, we diverged a little bit. But, you know, the play of Taj Gibson and Jimmy Butler have obviously been terrific for them. And I think they've brought along the young guys. I think early in the year we talked about all this meshing because there was a lot of change over the summer. But, you know, early in the year I think the young guys were struggling. You know, they were used to, you know, being the guys. And now you bring in, you know, Jimmy Butler, who's just had an incredible year. And Taj Gibson has been great, and Jeff Teague has been great. And then I think the Wiggins and the, you know, the Carl Anthony Towns now are, I think they have started, I don't want to say they have figured it out, but they have started how to figure out how to be who they are with those guys. And, I think they're going to be forced to be reckoned with going down the stretch. How about this? If you get a 4-5 match in the first round of Minnesota and Oklahoma City, how entertaining would that be?
Oh, the other one I think is interesting is if San Antonio slides to 4 and gets either of those two teams. I don't know that I think San Antonio's favored.
Fair point. Fair point. Although, you know, if you look at what San Antonio's done this year with their roster, it's just hard. It's just hard to think that they're going to slide. I mean, they've had a lot of injuries, and you know, there are times they put guys out there that you're like, I don't know how they win a game. And you know, it's credit to Coach Pop. They just keep doing it. So you know, good for them. So I'm not willing to. I don't know that Minnesota or Oklahoma City would overtake them, but you know, maybe law of averages finally get them and they lose some games. I haven't looked how hard their schedule is to finish or not.
You don't think that the DeJounte Murray, Bryn Forbes, Davis Bertans backcourt wing play was what you were expecting to be third in the Western Conference?
Well, absolutely not. But to their credit, those guys have played terrific, and it just speaks to the system they have there in San Antonio. Because those guys have just been, you know, they've all played great and stepped up, and they played the right way, and they've really been impactful to their success of the team this year, and which is just incredible.
The other team on the West that's interesting is Denver was kind of started the year with Minnesota and Oklahoma City as we all thought of them. They were 21-17 heading into this really soft schedule in January. And all of a sudden have lost 8 of their last 13, I think. Why has Denver not meshed?
Well, injury to Paul Millsap. I think that has to be the number one thing. I think that, into their credit, I thought when Paul got hurt, I was really worried about them totally taking a nosedive. But, you know, they've hung in there, but now it's catching up to them a little bit. But, As good as Jokic is, he kind of needs a tough guy beside him. I think they were a good match for each other. So I think, you know, the fact that they're still in the conversation, I think Paul's going to be back right after All-Star break, if I'm not mistaken, if I read that stuff correctly. I can see them making a late season push. Paul Millsap is a very underrated player in this league. I mean, I know salary's not underrated, but, you know, not everybody thinks of, you know, when you think of the best players in the league, you don't think of Paul Millsap necessarily. And he is just a complete player. He is all around. He's an all around gamer. He's a two-way player. He's a good locker room guy. He does it all. He's a great leader for the young guys. And, you know, I think him not being there has been a big impact on why they're not better. But having said that, I almost look at it as like, you know, they're thankful that, you know, they're eighth in the West right now. You know, if he comes back, maybe they make a push.
I don't know if you've seen Denver recently, but their next stretch is Oklahoma City, Golden State, Charlotte, Houston, Phoenix, San Antonio, Milwaukee, San Antonio, Houston, Clippers. That's their month. Are they ready for
that? So
are they ready for that?
They need Paul Millsap?
Yeah. Like, can they handle that right now?
Obviously that's going to be a brutal stretch, and that happens in the NBA, right? You have stretches like we just talked about Oklahoma City, who's in an easier stretch, and, and then Denver is getting ready to go into a hard stretch. So, that's such a big part of the game of the season that people don't really realize is, when your hard patches are, and sometimes you're just trying to survive. And I would guess that Denver would, just try to get through this next stretch, hopefully 500 or a couple games over, and then try to make a late season push.
All right. So I usually tell you what we're going to talk about. And every now and then I save one because I don't want you to have prepared it. So we're going to wrap up on this. Okay?
Bring it on, Locke. Bring it on.
All right. So this was actually a brainstorm conversation I had with somebody in the NBA. The Warriors luxury tax situation is outrageous coming up. Okay? Outrageous. And there's no way that they can just not – I got to back up where I'm going here. There's no way that they can just not sign a guy. Like, oh, Klay Thompson's too expensive. They can't open that new Chase Center, charge a few million dollars for their bunker suites, and then say, oh, by the way, we just didn't sign a guy. But they could trade two players for one. So, hypothetically, if the Golden State Warriors offered Klay Thompson and Draymond Green in a package, is there any player in the NBA where a team would say no?
Wow.
Like, would Minnesota say no on Karl Anthony Towns? Would New Orleans say no on Anthony Davis? Would Utah say no on Rudy Gobert? Is there any player in the NBA where you would say no if you were offered Draymond Green and Klay Thompson?
I don't think there is, David. I'm off the top of my head. And here's the thing. As good as all those players are you just mentioned, I mean, you're getting two of the, top 20 players
sure.
in the NBA?
Yeah.
Top 25? So I personally, as a coach, would say that, no, I would not say no. I would basically trade anybody for those two guys. And of course, you'd probably have to trade you'd probably have to trade a bunch of young guys with them that are very promising as well, which may hurt you a little bit. But to get those two guys to build around going forward, they're still relatively young. There's no way. I would absolutely do that 10 times out of 10.
So how many titles are Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, and Anthony Davis going to win together?
Good question. Depends on the surrounding players. How about that?
I mean, could you imagine?
Yeah.
I mean, they're already great. Maybe they wouldn't be better. I don't know. But
yeah. No, it's a great point. I don't know. I'm going to have to think about that one a little bit more. But you bring up an interesting conversation. Now, having said that, I think it's purely hypothetical. I don't think there's any way they ever do it. But I do think, I agree with what you're saying. They are going to be challenged after next year on, making these decisions on how you keep paying people. They don't seem to blink too much at spending money. So we'll see. I think as long as they're contenders, I would think it'd be hard to break that up, but they have some nice young pieces too. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with that.
I don't think it's as crazy as you do. I think there's two comments I would make of why I don't think it's crazy. One is, I think financially they really have, it's incredible what they're about to embark upon, and that could give them some relief and they would be just as good. And the other thing is just listening to Steve Kerr talk about how tired this team is this year and how worn out they are with four straight runs. I think they need some sort of significant infusion of difference, not better, just difference, to keep the run alive in the years ahead.
You know, they're all still relatively young.
Uh-huh.
And I get what you're saying. And it has been a hard stretch. But, I mean, who would not want to have a hard stretch where you played four straight finals? Right?
But it's still, I still think it's real. It's about as ridiculous as the idea that LeBron's going to take a meeting with the Warriors. That's the number one story in the league right now. So I'm not saying there's any truth to it. But you put it on paper, and to me, it just didn't. It was a fun thought exercise, and it didn't seem totally crazy. And then, when you suddenly think that they could end up with Anthony Davis, it's like, oh, well, maybe they would do it.
Yeah,
Minnesota's got a huge money problem coming up too. So maybe now they wouldn't. That wouldn't relieve Minnesota's money problem any if they go at Draymond Green and Karl Anthony Towns. I mean, Draymond Green and Klay Thompson. And frankly, if you add Draymond Green and Klay Thompson to Jimmy Butler and Andrew Wiggins, you may have actually just built the team that can beat you.
Yeah, right. Good point.
So you might.
You know what? You're at a different level of thinking. It sounds a little bit out there. But when I think about it, yeah, you could do it. I mean, just knowing how the league is, it'd be really hard for some people to make that happen and pull that off. But I can kind of see how it maybe works. Maybe not as crazy as I first thought when you first.
Okay, if the Warriors call New Orleans in the offseason, and Anthony Davis is 1 year away from being a free agent leaving for nothing, and they offer something anywhere close to this, New Orleans has to say yes, right?
Oh, absolutely. You could get those two guys?
Right. New Orleans has to say yes. So it's almost at this point. So this is a fair statement. It's the Warriors' choice at this point if they would like to have a team of Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, and Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
Because then they can have three of the top 10 players in the league.
And they'd be the skinniest team ever to win championships.
Zaza Pachulia would still man the middle with his wide elbows for another 6 years. Coach, thank you very much. Appreciate the time. And I'm glad we could leave you with a little bit of a head spinner at the end.
Yeah, no, thanks. Good question. Now I'm going to be thinking about that as I'm traveling. So anyway, thanks, David. It's always fun.